Welcome to another episode of The Functional Nerds. My name's Patrick Hester. I'm an author, a blogger, and an all-around functional nerd. And tonight, on the other line, I have the rock folk god, Mr. John Anilio.
Oh, thanks. That's very nice of you. I am John Anilio. I write songs about science fiction and fantasy. You can get my stuff over at johnanilio.bandcamp.com. Tonight we have a real nice interview with Jody Lynn Nye. Jody Lynn Nye has co-written several books with Robert Asprin, and her new book, Dragon's Deal, is out now, and I think you'll enjoy this interview with her.
I know you want to get to the interview, but I just have to say one thing real quick.
Okay.
We're recording this way ahead of time for a change.
Yes, yes.
And just Sunday, I got to hear a new song that you did that hasn't even been released yet, but should be released kind of, sort of, on another podcast by the time this podcast goes live.
Oh, okay. I know exactly the one you're referring to. Did you enjoy that said song?
I did. It was cool. And isn't it cruel that we're not telling anybody what it is?
Yes. Well, they'll find out soon enough.
Interview.
Yes. And on the line tonight, we have author Jody Lynn Nye. Jody has a book coming out through Ace Books called Dragon's Deal. It is a book that she co-authored with Robert Asprin, and this is the most recent in a long series of books. So first of all, Jody, say hi.
Glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thanks for coming on. And why don't you tell us, why don't you tell us a little bit about your association with Robert Asprin, who unfortunately did pass away just about 2 years ago, I believe. And
about 2.5 years.
2.5 years ago. And so why don't you tell us a little bit of something about how you guys got together and started writing together?
Well, my husband, Bill Fawcett, was one of Bob's best friends. The two of them had done some work together, some deals together. He was one of the owners of Mayfair Games that did the, Thief's World game, Sanctuary. And Bob and Lynn had to license that. They were integral in putting it together as well, and they got to be friends. So I had started reading Bob's books when I was still in college. When Bill and I started dating, he knew Robert Asprin, and I was thrilled about that because he's one of my favorite authors. I never dreamed that I would actually be working with him. Since the two of us both write humor, over time, people started to say, you know, you two should work together. And we looked at each other and went, you know how it is when people say, oh, you have so much in common, you get along so well. But it did actually work out. We were very compatible about that. The Dragons series is the second one that I started to work on with Bob, but not, in fact, if you want to call it a third series. The first book that he and I wrote together was called License Invoked. It was supposed to be the first of a series, but it turned out to be a standalone because we never quite got back to it. It was for Bain Books. It took place in New Orleans, and it was about spies, magic, and rock and roll. It was a lot of fun.
Nice.
Now, Bob is most well-known for the Myth Adventures series, which he started in 1978, and those were the ones that I was reading. So Bob had a bit of writer's block in the middle of his contract for 12 books in the Myth Adventures series, and that's when we started to work on License Invoked, and we got to talking. He thought he might be interested in having me work with him when the initial contract was up, and that throwing around ideas kind of got him going again. So when the time came that he was ready to finish the 12th book, we started talking about the 13th book, which we called Myth Alliances, and was the first of our collaborations. We wrote 6 novels and an anthology together before he passed away. The Dragon series was something that he started by himself with Dragons Wild, and it was followed up by Dragons Luck, which he actually finished not long before he died, and the copy edit ended up on my doorstep because I'd been working with him, and the publisher hoped that I would take care of it. So
You know, when you talk about the myth adventures,
mm-hmm.
It always makes me think of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And I know
that
that's an odd thing to say, but there was an episode where someone said to Buffy, I thought such and such happened. And she said, no, you were mistaken. And, you know, it's the way the titles go and everything. It just, that always just reminded me of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, Joss Whedon is a fan, so it's quite likely he read the books at one point.
Now,
they've certainly been around long enough.
Yes, they have. Mm. Now, we would be remiss if we didn't mention that you've actually done a lot of collaborations, including with Anne McCaffrey on some Pern things. And how do you handle that? I mean, we've had other folks on. We've had married couples who write books together on and collaborate. Mm-hmm. We've had other authors who talk about the collaboration process, and it just fascinates me because you do have, you know, you've got egos involved, and you've got different ideas, and you know, you want to go one way and someone else wants to go the other way. How have you handled that throughout the years?
The chief thing that you have to have in mind when you're going to collaborate with someone is, do you respect them? And you have to treat them with respect as well. You don't have to like them. I know a noted couple of authors who've been working together for years and do not like each other anymore, but they still write a good book.
Wow.
There are plenty of things that you need to know about your collaborator before you start working. Are they likely to hold up their end of the bargain? Are they likely to finish a project? And if the answer is you'll end up carrying most of the weight and you still agree to go forward with that project, then that's something that you knew, you know, as Super Chicken used to say, that you knew the job was dangerous when you took it, Fred. So that was just something you need to take into account. But if you don't trust the person, if you don't believe that they will respect your work, then don't work with them. Just because you think it was a good idea or just because they asked you is not a good enough reason. And I do know people who've gone into projects and wish that they hadn't later on. But in some cases, there has been some beautiful literature written by people who didn't think that they could work together and turns out they could.
Mm. Mm. Now, what was sort of how you guys sort of divvied up the work? I mean, we had Kevin J. Anderson on mm-hmm. a while back, and he writes the some of the Dune books with Brian Herbert, yeah. and he was saying that they just basically alternate chapters. And mm-hmm. then we had Clay and Susan Griffith, who have the Vampire Empire novels out through Pyre, and they sort of kind of write, you know, different characters, and mm-hmm. they edit each other's work and they go over. So it ends up being a very consistent tone for them. They're more, cause they're the married couple that Patrick spoke of, and mm-hmm. they, you know, they sort of polish each other's work. So it's a little different for them. How did you guys break up the work?
Every single book was different.
Okay.
Every single project, anytime that there's collaboration of any kind, the dynamic is going to be a little bit different. Whose idea was it? Who's going to chair the project, whether or not they came up with the initial idea. In the case of, say, License Invoked, which is one that I remember the outlining well because it was the first time we'd done it, we sat down and hashed out an outline together, and then we went through and marked in the margins, and I probably still have this outline somewhere, A for Aspirin and J for Jody to decide who would do what section. And it wasn't chapter by chapter because that turned out to be an artificial separation. For Kevin, it might work, and for some mm-hmm. people, it might work. But depending on your expertise and your level of knowledge and also your willingness to write a section, you might mm-hmm. want to write something really badly and have to talk the other person out of it.
Wow.
In the case of License Invoked, Bob knew a lot of roadies, so he wanted to write the sections about the backstage stuff about the rock star, and he also wanted to write the villains. He really enjoyed the villains, so he wanted to write those two villains. So we had we discussed who would do what part. Sometimes a part of a section, sometimes a couple of chapters in a row, and then we put it together and smoothed it out at the end. The consistency thing is incredibly important because one set of eyes has to be on it at the end. It doesn't matter whose it is as long as you agree, because if you don't have that consistent sounding voice, people are able to go through and say, oh, I know she wrote that part. I know he wrote that part. I don't think that people can really tell in our books. We were pretty good at it. Mm. And I consider myself to be a pretty good mimic. So for all the people that I've worked with, I do what I can to emulate their style.
Hmm. Now, with the newest book that just came out, mm-hmm. it was now, did Robert write a lot of it already, or did you work a lot from notes of his? How did that work? Because I know you said something about something being dropped off at your house earlier on. How much of it was what state was it in?
I worked from his earlier books.
Okay. Okay. So with this recent one, how much of it did you write, and how much is it? Did he still write? Yeah, of the brand new book.
Well,
yeah.
I used his world and his characters. I carried on from some of the ideas that he'd left behind. There was, of course, a cliffhanger at the end of the second book, and I had to carry on with that. Bob had a practice in most of his books of leaving a cliffhanger in the midst of a series, so that you had to want to read the next book, and it also gave me direction. It does give you direction. It leaves you something that intriguing that maybe you'll tease the reader and you won't cover it in the first chapter, or maybe even not the second chapter, and you'll lead up to it gradually until the person has this unfulfilled gestalt driving them crazy, and they have to finally have the resolution to it.
I have to imagine it was emotionally difficult for you to just kind of carry on with that.
Yes, I think that it was. Bob and I were supposed to see each other the very next day after he died. We were going to meet at a convention. In fact, he was waiting for his ride to the airport when a friend came to pick him up and found him gone. And we were going to get together and spend MarCon in programming together and talking about things. And one of the things that we used to do at conventions, because we lived in New Orleans and Chicago, was to sit and plot books out where we could feed off each other's energy.
Mm-hmm.
So I was looking forward to catching up, because he's an old friend, and talking business and doing plotting and just having fun, because he was a great person to be with. And Bill came in and said, Bob is dead.
Mm.
And we were just so flattened, we didn't go either. So the convention was very nice about it, but how could you carry on after that?
Sure. But, you know, I'm sure that, you know, he would have wanted this book to come out. So,
absolutely.
And I know the fans are just ecstatic that they have this book. Do you plan to do any more after this one in this series, or?
I'm so glad you asked. Yes.
That's why I get paid the big bucks.
Well, you're worth it. Ace Books has, in fact, given me another contract, which I am currently working on, that contains provisions for the next two Myth Adventures.
Oh, there you go.
And another Dragons book.
Very cool. Huh. Well, congratulations.
Thank you. I'm very pleased about it. It's a tribute to Bob that he left such strong worlds that I can pick it up and do it. I found our styles to be compatible. So I've already had a couple of really enthusiastic and kind notes from fans who have read the book and were very happy with it.
Speaking of your fans, one of them follows me on Twitter.
Ah.
And I put out on Twitter today that we were going to be interviewing you, and she absolutely flipped out. And she started sending me all this stuff to ask you, and I'm like, whoa, slow down, calm down. You could pick one thing.
I'll answer anything. I may answer with no, but I'll answer if you've got something.
That her absolute favorite thing that you ever worked on was the Dragon Lover's Guide.
Oh yes, of course. And Dragon Lover's Guide to Pern.
Yes, and she said that you edited that multiple times, and that it was just, how did she put it here? I can actually pull it up. I'd love to hear about the process of helping with the Dragon Lover's Guide, because that book is brilliant. It's lore-tastic, and it covers so much. It is just absolutely awesome.
Oh, that's so nice.
So, you know, I mean, how did that process work? What went into that?
Well, again, we have to go all the way back to Mayfair Games. They did the Dragon Riders of Pern role-playing and card game.
Mm-hmm.
And Todd McCaffrey was a college student at the time, and he interned at Mayfair while they were working on his mother's game. And they got to be friends of the family, and I got to know Anne. So my first book was a choose-your-own-adventure that was set on Pern. This is Dragon Harper. In the days before Nintendo, there were choose-your-own-adventure books.
I had
where
those.
Where you actually had to turn the pages and,
yes.
and go to sections? Right.
Yes.
Okay.
I always cheated.
Those came up. Well, we made it more difficult to cheat because we mixed up the sections. You couldn't automatically find where you were going. Bill commissioned various fantasy and science fiction worlds. Combat Command was a series for Ace, which were armies, and Crossroads was a series for Tor books, which was individual adventures. And I did four individual adventures, two of them in Pern, two of them in Xanth. And that was enormous fun. I had to present my plot to Anne in 1985 at NorwestCon. It was the first time I'd met her, and she could not have been nicer. In fact, she's always been enormously supportive. And got to talking about possibly doing a guide after the fashion of the Guide to Castle Amber that Bill had already produced, and I'm trying to think of what the second one was. But he was also talking to Piers Anthony about doing a Xanth guide as well, which I did eventually write and was illustrated by Todd Cameron Hamilton, the same fellow who did the illustrations in the Dragon Lover's Guide. We went over to Ireland for 8 days, and we sat and interviewed Annie every day, asked her questions, took her through things that we'd always wanted to know, things that fans had asked us. Went into exhaustive detail on holds, weirs, and craft halls. And Todd, who had some training in medical art, he did some pre-med, so he was able to draw the dragons exactly as Annie had always pictured them, which is not exactly the way that Michael Whalen draws them, but his are so gorgeous. But they have a different musculature, and their elbows and shoulders are different than Michael pictures them, and their head knobs are different, too. They don't have ears. Dragons don't really hear.
Hmm.
They intuit. They're psychic. So it was a lot of fun. It was originally supposed to be 35,000 words and maybe 50 illustrations, and we turned in double of both. So it became there was so much there. And then the second edition, which your reader is alluding to, we added the dolphins and some of the other things that had come along in subsequent books. And, of course, the day may come when we should talk to Del Rey about doing a third edition.
Yes, definitely. It sounds like you under-promised and over-delivered.
Yes. That's always the best way to do things.
Exactly. I had another question. This is not from Twitter. This is just for me. You've done a lot of humor in fantasy fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that is a dying art? Is it underappreciated today? It seems like people want more dark, gritty stuff than they want humor anymore.
They really do. They appreciate humor, but they don't respect it.
Right.
And I feel there's plenty of horror in the world. If you want to be depressed, watch the evening news.
Yeah. Especially this week.
I think for the last several years, you can find a really great in many cases. So I consider myself an anodyne to daily life. I want to be the fun thing that someone picks up and says, I can escape. I have time.
Right.
So I want to be the fun thing that someone turns to. Now, that means that I don't win awards, but people enjoy what I'm doing.
Yes. I'm sorry, John, I keep doing this to you, but another thought that I had was I read a little blurb about An Unexpected Apprentice.
That is a fantasy duology that I did for Tor Books. Humongous epic. I hadn't done anything like that before, but Brian Thompson, who's working for Tor at the time, he has also passed away. I've had really bad luck with friends in the last few years. What would you do if you wrote The Lord of the Rings, but the characters were largely female?
Yes, that's the blurb I saw. It said it was The Hobbit if Bilbo had been a girl.
It's really more if Frodo had been the girl.
Okay.
Because this is the quest to deal with the untenable magic item, which should not be out in the world. The thing that only Tolkien has really covered, most people say, oh, there's a gigantic magical item. We will capture it and we will use it and we will turn it to good. Tolkien pointed out how dangerous a concept that is and how wrong it is, because these things have too much power for one person. And as with the ring, it could cause murder, war, destruction. And it should not be out in the world. It was put together for the wrong reasons. So I thought it was an interesting epic, and there's some humor in that too, of course.
Of course, and I just thought that was an interesting comparison, and I was hoping that was a flattering one for you, but it looks like you're all over it. You sort of intended it to be that way.
Yes, yeah. I had no problem with that as a concept for an epic. I have admired Tolkien. I don't pretend that I could be Tolkien, but I loved the Lord of the Rings books. I liked the movies, and I was intrigued by the notion.
Mm.
The books.
Nice.
It was two books. An Unexpected Apprentice was the first book. The second one is called A Forthcoming Wizard.
Very nice. Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
John?
Oh, well, I was going to say, why don't you, before we start wrapping it up, you know, we didn't actually talk a whole lot about what the new book is about. I took a picture of the book when Ace had sent it to me, and someone had tweeted back to me that said, is that a dragon playing poker on the cover of that book? So I think it's certainly a very interesting cover, and I've seen it out in all the bookstores over the past couple weeks. So
that's going to replace the dogs playing poker picture that everybody has.
I think it should.
Yeah.
So why don't you just, you know, give our listeners like a little bit about what they can expect in this book?
Okay. Let me first cover the series itself. The Dragon series is about Griffin and Valerie McCandles, a couple of young people he's just graduated from college, she's still in college. And they have just discovered that they are hereditary dragons. They have begun to manifest their powers, and a lot of people are becoming very interested in them. They end up fleeing to New Orleans from their home in Ann Arbor, and which Bob knows well because he was brought up in Ann Arbor and, of course, lived the last years of his life in New Orleans. Griffin falls in with some other dragons, all of whom look like humans, but have powers and incredibly tough skin. You cannot stab a dragon, you can't shoot a dragon, but you can kill them in other ways. But their hide is impenetrable, and they can do magic, depending on how pure their blood is. Valerie and Griffin are almost pure-blooded dragons, so they have incredible powers, which make them very interesting to other people who might like to use them, if they can. But dragons tend to attract other people to do their bidding, just because the more power you have, the more attractive you are to other people, and the more power means that they feel that they can be protected by you.
Hmm.
Griffin has a lot of enemies, but he also has a lot of friends. And New Orleans is a great place to be a dragon, as well as a number of other mythical creatures. There are witches and vampires and werewolves and selkies and shapeshifters of all different kinds, and the ghost of a voodoo priestess, who is a really important character. In the book that Dragon's Deal, Griffin has been asked by a long dormant Mardi Gras crew, which consists of all dragons, to be their king. And there are a lot of responsibilities involved in it, including throwing a masked ball that he's not necessarily ready for, because at the same time he's running a small gambling operation. And there are a bunch of enemy people who are also dragons who want to shut him down. They want to drive him out of business, kill him if they can, just take away his power. And he has to deal with both situations at once.
Hmm.
And there's a lot of fun in that, and New Orleans itself is practically a character in it. It was a lot of fun writing.
Great. All right. Well, thank you so much, Jody. Now, before as we're wrapping up here, so obviously the new book is Dragon's Deal, and that's out now. Why don't you tell our listeners what else you have that's coming out? I know you have a couple other things coming out as well, so why don't you tell us about those?
Well, I'm working on another Myth Adventures book, and that's all I'm going to say about that for now. But I have a new book that is coming out from Bain Books in April called View from the Imperium. And this one was huge fun to write. I've been intending to do this for ages. This is about Lord Thomas Canago of the Imperium, of course. He is sixth cousin to the Emperor, and he is a feckless young fool with way too much money and an inflated sense of self-importance who bumbles into situations and could destroy things, but he really means well. It is very much like Jeeves and Wooster in space. His Jeeves is a very quiet man named Commander Parsons who more or less keeps him from having disastrous outcomes, but there's a great deal more to it than that. So I had enormous fun with this. This one is humorous, and I've really been wanting to write Thomas for a long time, so I'm very pleased with it. It's got a very exciting cover, which is also on my website, which is jodynye.com, and you should take a look at it. I will be posting an excerpt probably this week.
Oh, very cool.
Mm-hmm. And what else can I tell you?
Twitter, Facebook, any of that kind of stuff?
Yes, I'm on Twitter, Jody Lynn Nye, and Facebook also, Jody Lynn Nye. Twitter with no spaces and Facebook with spaces. I am a little more often on Twitter than I am on Facebook.
Okay.
Really need to get on there more often. But I also have a second website that was for the Myth Adventures work, mythadventures.net. And both of them list where I'm going to be at conventions. I'm going to be at Conjure.
That was going to be my next question, if you had any cons or signings coming up.
I have conventions coming up in March, June, and August.
I'm sorry, Jody. I have no idea what's going on at John's house right now, but boy, it's awful loud.
Sorry. It's we haven't eaten dinner yet. Yeah, no, we're good. Just keep going.
Yeah, so you have conventions and signings coming up.
Okay, I'm going to be at Conjure in Houston in March. I think it's March 11th. I'll be at DuckCon in Naperville, Illinois in June, and DragonCon in Labor Day weekend in Atlanta.
Awesome.
WindyCon in November here in Chicago.
Very cool.
I may have others, but right now my haven't got them planned. They might be spur of the moment. They might not.
Sure.
So as for other things, they have not been planned yet. It's I've got a lot of writing to do in the next several months, so I really want to concentrate on that.
Well, very cool.
Well, very good.
Thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, our pleasure. Thank you. And we're back. Thank you. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Jody. She's a real nice guest.
That was a
lot of fun. Yeah, she was great. I was happy to have her on. So in the coming weeks, who do we have coming up? We have Tim Akers should be coming up soon, and we have Cherie Priest. That's a real nice interview coming up as well. I also booked a couple of new guests for further into February and March. Ari Marmel will be coming up. And a bunch of cool guests. So stay tuned for upcoming episodes. For this week, once again, you can find all my music at johnanilio.bandcamp.com. By the time this airs, I'll have a new video up over at Wired for my Geek Dad guitar lessons. I teach how to play Real Gone, which is a Sheryl Crow song, and that is geeky because it is the first song in the Pixar Cars movie, which my son really likes.
He's the only one.
Yeah. You didn't like that?
No, I hate that. That was one of the worst Pixar movies, I thought.
Really? Wow. Well, forget it then. Anyway.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. Well, you know, He's four. He likes things like that, and I like things like that too. So anyway, so I have that out over there, and you can follow me at Twitter, twitter.com/JohnAnilio. What do you have going on, Patrick?
A Green Hornet marathon on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Really?
I'm TiVoing it. I'm DVRing it right now, like the whole friggin' day, because I haven't seen the Green Hornet in forever. So there's that. I wanted to throw out there that Rock sent me The King of Crags from Stephen Dias or Dias, and it's just an absolutely gorgeous book, and it makes me want to read it just for reading it. It's kind of interesting. We were just talking to Jody about the Dragons of Pern and stuff, and this cover just has like this massive white dragon on it.
I got that one too.
It's awesome. It's cool.
I think that's the second part.
It is
a series, and I know a lot of people really like the first book in that series, so I'm gonna have to like check out the first book in that series too, because I'm kind of interested in that one myself. So
that was enough to make me want to mention it on air, so there you
go. Very good.
I am now a part-time blogger slash publicist slash proofreader, I guess, as well, for 40k Books in Milan, Italy.
Very good. Well, congratulations on that. That's really cool.
Yep. So I have a new Twitter account for that. They are exclusive ebooks. They only do ebooks. So they do, actually, and it's not even like full length novels. It's like novellas, essays, short stories, that kind of stuff, and some interesting stuff too. But I have a Twitter account for that now called 40K USA. So if anybody wants to know anything about those ebooks, go there. ATFMB.com as usual has tons of stuff on there. Go there, read it. Twitter.com/ATFMB, Facebook.com/ATFMB. I still don't have ATFMB.bandcamp.com because I don't have any music.
You totally have to do that. You posted some lyrics this week.
I did.
And you can do it. Yeah.
That's part of my clean up the basement project. Get organized. I bought like this shelf where you put it together, and then it's got the drawers and stuff. And it's already fallen apart once on me, and I'm thinking about just getting like a nail gun and nailing everything and saying, screw those little cam things with the screwdriver bit and the wood glue. And I hate all that crap.
I gotcha.
But anyway, I was going through boxes and I found old lyrics and I took a picture and put it up there. I used to write a lot of lyrics and it was kind of fun. Anything new going on? We're trying to do cool things over at SF Signals podcast, so check that out. I think that's it.
Usual stuff. Yeah, hopefully within the next month or so we'll get all the new stuff over at the actual Functional Nerds website. We've been trying to put some stuff together. We need to get on the ball with that. I know on my end I do anyway, so hopefully we'll get some stuff going there. So
As if I'm not busy enough, I'm also working on a new webcomic with Clifton Hill.
Yeah, cool. I look forward to seeing that. I know you showed me some of the some of the initial stuff, and looks cool.
And doing scripting and sending it to him, and he's doing art, and it's coming together hopefully soon.
Cool. Awesome. I look forward to checking that out. Cool. All right, everybody. Well, we'll see you next time, and have a good week.
Bye.
Chances went the distance, now I'm back on my feet, just a man and his will to survive. So many times it happens too fast, you change your passion for glory. Don't lose your grip on the dreams of the past, you must fight just to keep them alive. You see, I am the tiger, the cream of the fight, rising up to the challenge of our rival. And the last known survivor stalks his prey in the night, and he's watching us all through the eye. Love the tiger, face to face.